Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Catherine Morehouse. The Biden administration just announced this huge rule aimed at cleaning up our water systems. And it also happens to be the most significant safety upgrade to the nation's drinking water in over three decades. The rule comes from EPA, and it's the first ever national limit on forever chemicals, which are toxins that have been linked to a variety of health problems. The move also fulfills one of President Joe Biden's key public health promises, but it comes with a hefty annual price tag, like I'm talking billions of dollars per year. So today, I spoke with Politico's Annie Snyder to learn more about Biden's new effort to clean up America's drinking water. It's Thursday, April 11th.
So the Biden administration on Wednesday announced the first ever national limits for PFAS in drinking water. PFAS are these so-called forever chemicals. They've been used in everything from nonstick cookware to camping gear to pizza boxes since like the 1940s. And they are called forever chemicals because the very same quality that makes them so valuable in commercial products also makes them virtually impossible to degrade in the environment. And so as we've been using them, they've been ending up in our drinking water, and EPA now estimates that they're in 100 million Americans' drinking water. That's like one in three Americans. It's a huge number of people. The rule that we got on Wednesday is the first time that we're seeing a federal drinking water limit. Several states have, in fact, issued their own, but this is the first one that sets a federal floor for treatment. And it covers six different PFAS. PFOA and PFOS, if they are detected in drinking water supplies, would have to be removed down to the level at which they could no longer be detected. And then these four other PFAS also have strict, you know, very low new levels. The rule also includes a provision that would trigger treatment requirements if you have sort of a accumulation of different PFAS, even if none of those individual chemicals exceeds its individual limit. So under this rule, water utilities will have to test for these PFAS, and if they are detected at concerning levels, will have to treat for them. And the rule gives utilities 5 years, the first three for testing, and if they test at the concerning levels, 2 years for the pretty significant physical upgrades that would be required to be able to treat for them.
And I'm wondering if the rule that ultimately came out of the administration is pretty much in line with what people expected or were hoping for, or are there any surprises? And did the administration go as far as they could have, or were people hoping for more?
I mean, I think possibly the biggest surprise is that the final rule hews pretty closely to the proposed version, that provision that I was just describing about the sort of covering the mixtures and acknowledging the sort of additive problems that can accumulate with PFAS. That was a pretty novel thing that was included in the proposed rule. There were some concerns raised about it from industry groups and the like. And EPA in the final version held to that. And they also included limits for three of the four shorter chain PFAS, what we call them. So the original proposed version had only included individual limits for PFOA and PFOS. The final rule actually added individual limits for three of those replacement chemicals. And that is an acknowledgement that the science is mounting on the individual harms of those as well. I would say that that is something that industry had pushed back on. And so I think it is pretty notable that the Biden administration finalized a rule that included those.
So let's talk a bit about the price tag here, because we know that's often one of the thorniest parts of these issues. I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about who is ultimately bearing the costs of this rule.
You're right. The costs of this rule are enormous and are not to be glossed over. The final version, EPA estimated, would cost $1.5 billion annually. That's roughly equal to the benefits that it would bring in the form of reduced illnesses and deaths. But that is an enormous amount of money. And it's, you know, at a cost that would accrue every single year as long as these chemicals are showing up in drinking water supplies. Now, there is federal funding available. There's $9 billion that was included in the bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed a few years ago, and EPA announced the availability of $1 billion from that pot in tandem with this rule. There is also funding from the companies that manufactured these chemicals that is now on the table. Last year, the big manufacturers, 3M and DuPont, cut class action settlement deals that would provide, oh gosh, I think on the order of $11 or $12 billion in total. So there is funding coming to help with this, but I don't think anybody thinks that the federal and the settlement funding is going to be enough. And at the end of the day, it is quite likely that we're going to see ratepayers paying a significant portion of this bill. And that is controversial for several reasons. First of all, nobody likes to have their water bills go up. That is often a big political headache for local and municipal officials. And also because those kinds of rate increases are felt most keenly by low-income individuals, low-income families, low-income households.
Interesting. Seeing very similar dilemmas in the electricity rate space, as I'm sure you can imagine. And I want to point to one figure that you point out that seems particularly striking. You report that this is the first update in 3 decades, which seems like a really long time. I'm wondering how that could pose legal challenges to this rule.
So that is a really interesting aspect of what's happening here. So this is, it's not exactly the first upgrade to any drinking water standards, but this is the first time that EPA is finalizing a new drinking water standard for a new contaminant since the law was updated in 1996. And those 96 updates included provisions that raised the bar for EPA to be able to justify a new regulation. And the bar has been so high that they have not done it for 30 years. So this is the first test of whether or not EPA is going to be able to meet the bar that was set in those 96 amendments for justifying a new drinking water standard, in particular for justifying the sort of costs and benefits of regulating a drinking water contaminant. There's a couple kind of interesting things that stem from that. First of all, you know, if this standard, you know, holds, it's going to require thousands of drinking water utilities around the country to upgrade their systems to treat for PFAS. But those treatment systems also capture all manner of other contaminants that are in our water, many of which have emerged in the 3 decades since EPA has regulated a new contaminant. So it has the ability to have long coattails, but the big if here is whether or not it can withstand legal challenges that we strongly suspect will be coming. We've seen strong statements out of the American Chemistry Council, which of course represents manufacturers, and out of some of the trade groups that represent drinking water utilities that are very concerned about the costs. And in fact, we've also seen concerns raised by one of the Republicans on Capitol Hill who has really been very supportive of doing a drinking water regulation. That's Senator Shelley Moore Capito, top Republican on the Environment and Public Works Committee, whose home state of West Virginia has seen big PFAS problems. She had really pressured EPA to get a, under both the Trump administration and the Biden administration, to get a regulation done, but is raising real concerns about this final version, the costs that it would have, and whether or not the benefits of these really, really strict, low standards would meet them. So I think we're going to see legal challenges, and we're going to have to see how that plays out.
Also, the backlog of clean energy resources trying to connect to the power grid jumped again in 2023. There are now nearly 2,600 gigawatts of mostly clean electricity and storage capacity waiting to get online, according to a new DOE National Lab report. That is more than double the capacity of the entire U.S. electricity system. The report from DOE urged better policies to bring more of these resources online, especially as the grid faces looming capacity shortfalls in the next few years. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch and subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show is composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. And that's our show. I'm Catherine Morehouse, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.